So this evening I'm going to be talking about Kshanti. So this is the third in our talks exploring the six perfections or the six paramitas, which are practiced by the Bodhisattva. The first one that we looked at was dana, or generosity and giving. And then after that we looked at sila, or ethics. So Kshanti is usually translated as either patience or forbearance. But it's a Sanskrit word, and it doesn't completely translate as just one word, so it has other associated meanings. So I did mention before about the fact that it's also associated with receptivity and receptivity to the Dharma. And there's elements linked to the sort of forbearance and patience aspect of tolerance and of forgiveness sometimes as well. So I'm going to be looking at some of these different aspects of it, but in particular I'm going to be looking at Kshanti in terms of it being seen as the antidote to ill will and hatred. So I'll be looking at that aspect of Kshanti. I'll be exploring a bit about Kshanti in terms of patience and forbearance, some of it in receptivity to the Dharma. And in particular, I'm also going to be looking at how we can also use it as a kind of gateway to developing more insight in our lives and our practice. So traditionally, there are three main contexts where we would be practicing Kshanti, practicing patience. One of them is towards the natural world and our environment, and especially in terms of things that happen outside of our control. So that can include things like the weather, sort of more extreme cases when you've got things like tsunamis, hurricanes, floods, droughts. But it could also be on a much more mundane level that you've planned a barbecue and it rains, or, you know, you really like the sunshine and it's sort of really cold and wet and miserable and grey and you haven't seen the sun for weeks on end, you know. So we can practice it at lots of different levels, basically. And so in that aspect, I would say it also includes other things in our physical environment, in our external environment. Then there's also practicing Kshanti or patience towards ourselves. I think that's an interesting one, because I think we can often be quite impatient with ourselves, quite judgmental towards ourselves. I mean, it links very much into sort of metta and self-metta, this idea of practicing patience towards ourselves. But that, again, that can be in different ways, different levels. So we can practice Kshanti towards our bodies, towards our physical limitations. It may be that there are things that we would like to be able to do which we can't do just because we aren't able to do it physically. But also, you know, we will all experience times of being sick and ill, going through the aging process. You know, at some point we're all going to die. So those are all other things that, where we can sort of try and have some patience. And then also, we can practice Kshanti towards our, you know, emotional states, our psychological states, and towards our practice. We may, once we start on a spiritual path, once we start practicing ethics, we're likely to become much more aware of all the ways that we fall short. When we're practicing meditation, we become much more aware of ourselves, more aware of others, and sometimes that can be quite painful, sometimes it can be quite challenging, that we can actually sort of feel discouraged, or we can even feel upset by, you know, what we've done, what we haven't done in the past and in the present. And rather than getting ourselves into a sort of cycle of criticism, blame or shame and things like that, then it's really helpful to sort of just bring in that element of Kshanti, of sort of having patience with ourselves, that we're trying the best we can, and the aspect of being receptive to the Dharma and the teachings of the Dharma, that then can allow us to actually think about, well, what are the conditions that have led to that? Because one of the key teachings, you know, of the Buddha was that everything arises in dependence upon conditions. So who we are now, all the things that we've done in our lives, you know, they have been the result of all different sets of conditions that have affected us and affected the way that we think, the way that we act. And then the third main area to practice Kshanti is towards others. And that's, I think, where the sort of forbearance aspect of Kshanti comes in. And especially towards people that we may not like, and towards people that may cause us discomfort or even harm. So we're trying not to just have a knee-jerk reaction, because often when people do things that hurt us or that we don't like, perhaps we've got a view about them, we see them and we immediately have an opinion, oh, they're not the kind of person I like. We're sort of acting again out of our sort of conditioning, really. There's all kinds of things that have happened in our lives that have conditioned our responses and our views, and quite often we just react unthinkingly, not even being aware of that. So when we practice forbearance, when we practice Kshanti, we're trying, in a way, to hold our experience. We may still feel whatever we're feeling, but rather than just react from it, we give ourselves a bit of space. And then from that space, maybe we can choose to act a bit more skillfully. So that's the sort of basic areas for practicing Kshanti. So life gives us plenty of opportunities to practice Kshanti. We don't actually have to go looking for them. Because we all experience things that are unpleasant in our lives, things that are painful, things that are disappointing, challenging, in our external lives. And we also all experience states of mind, emotional states that are unpleasant or, you know, painful from time to time. So in all of those, again, it's a question of, do we get really caught up in them? Do we lose ourselves in that state? Do we, in a way, encourage that state to get stronger by sort of ruminating on it? Or do we kind of try and suppress it? Do we try to... or do we get into a whole drama about what's going on in our lives and what we're experiencing? Because often that adds to our suffering, that adds to our pain, and it doesn't help. So if we can actually bring in an element of Kshanti and just let ourselves, I suppose, experience what we're experiencing and try not to have those sorts of reactions, just try to see what is, then again, that's a place where we can start to respond more skillfully, more ethically. And, yeah, I do think, again, it's this area of being patient towards ourselves. In Buddhism, there's a practice of confession. So it has slightly different connotations to confessions, I think, in some different traditions. But one of the things that we're doing when we confess in Buddhism is we're actually sort of taking responsibility for our actions and for our unethical actions, our unskillful actions. That we, you know, rather than spend a lot of time feeling guilty or feeling paralysed by that, or what we do is we kind of acknowledge what we've done, we take responsibility for it. If there's any way that we can sort of make amends or sort of change the situation in a more positive way, then obviously we try and do that. But we're also trying to sort of understand, well, you know, why did I react in that way? You know, what were the conditions that triggered it? You know, what could I do differently, and sort of form the intention to try and behave differently in the future. So you can do that in different ways. You can actually do it, you know, talking to friends or whatever, but you can also do it in a more ritual context, for instance, like a Sevenfold Puja. So that can be quite a helpful way of, I suppose, expressing Kshanti to yourselves in terms of not holding on to feeling bad about ourselves, not holding on to sort of criticism and self-blame and judgment. So Kshanti is not the same as being a doormat. I mean, for me, patience doesn't particularly have exciting connotations and associations. I think I sort of grew up, and where I came across the word patience, it was sort of as a Christian virtue, and it was sort of like the heroines of books who would be very, very good and endure absolutely everything uncomplainingly. And they tended not to have any kind of dynamism or energy, and I much prefer the sort of more heroic kind of heroines, and really didn't want to identify with those kinds of heroines. But actually, I think there is a place where being patient, actually, in a situation, not immediately getting up and doing something or trying to change things, requires more courage. Requires much harder work, and sometimes it's more appropriate and more helpful. But I suppose what I wanted to sort of say about it not being like a doormat is because I don't think Kshanti is about staying in a situation that is harmful or destructive. It's not about staying in a relationship with somebody that might be, you know, abusing you or something like that. There's, you know, you have to sort of use your discrimination around that, but it is about how we respond to dukkha, I guess. For me, that's a very key aspect of it. So, yeah, and I think for me that has been quite an area, because I think I grew up in quite difficult circumstances where often I didn't have much control over what happened, and I did sort of grow up with the kind of attitude and mentality of just sort of, well, I just had to sort of stay with what was, and I didn't have any sense of agency that I could change things, change my situation, change myself. And from that I had this habit, this kind of conditioning, where I would sort of put up with really extreme situations for a very, very long time. And I don't think that that is Kshanti. I think Kshanti is something very, very different. So I think if you're trying to practice Kshanti, you have to do it with discernment and self-metta. So you need to be thinking about, well, am I in positive conditions? What can I do to change them if they're not? Kshanti as forbearance. Well, people aren't usually behaving the way we want them to behave. I think we often try to change people, control people, to make them fit how we would really like them to be in our lives, the view we would like, what would suit us. And sometimes people will do things that are unskillful or that we feel quite critical of. Sometimes they will do things that are hurtful to us, or and I suppose the immediate reaction to something like that is usually to sort of feel anger or rage. At least that's been my experience. I don't know if it is with yours, but I think and then from that place it's very easy to just immediately start justifying yourself and blaming the other person and holding on to your hurt and your anger, and then forming views about them because of that, and then acting from that place. And then you can create this whole scenario where something that sometimes is quite minor, sometimes it might be more major, escalates, really. I'm thinking of a time when I went to Spain to get ordained. There's a women's ordination retreat centre up a mountain in Spain, and basically you spend 3 months cut off from the world with the same small group of people, leading a fairly simple life. There's sort of some structure, some things in there, but pretty much you are just there, very, very aware of your mental states, and you don't have all the normal distractions of your life, all the sort of normal busyness of your life, where you can sort of not be aware of that. You can kind of distract yourself, keep yourself busy without necessarily engaging with that. Whereas there, you pretty much there was, you know, you were just there with the same people with the same mental states. If you were reacting towards them, there was no way to get away from them. And I suppose one of the things I saw very clearly was just like how my mind worked and the kind of patterns I had, and sometimes like how really minor silly things I would react to. So, yes, I suppose one example of that is I had a friend there, and we're both musical, and there was a drum there that someone had made, a sort of from an old big bit of piping that had kind of fallen into disrepair. So we fixed that one up, and that was great fun. And then we decided we wanted to make our own one, so we did. And it was quite a project, but we did it. And then towards the end, it was like, well, how are we going to decorate it? We wanted to sort of paint it. And So I said, well, to my friend, well, you can decide what we want to do. But she kept on changing her mind and changing her mind and changing her mind, so it took a while. And then when she'd finally decided what we were going to do, she said, oh, let's paint flames, the flames of samsara. So, oh, that's a nice idea. And there was another friend of ours there who was an artist, and she'd been quite interested in us making the drum, so said, oh, would you like to help? You know, so she actually did us some nice prototypes of these very stylized Tibetan flames. Spent a couple of hours doing that. I got quite excited about it. And then the next time I saw my friend, she said, oh, I've had a better idea, let's do something else. And I just got really, really shirty and angry, actually. Which is, you know, it was just a minor thing. It didn't really matter what was on this drum. And then I just expressed it. I said, you know, the next time I saw it, I said, well, what are we going to do with this damn drum? So I actually even swore about it. And then she kind of responded to me responded to my, I suppose my ill will, my anger and things, by sort of saying, well, I don't want to do anything to the drum until you've purified your mental states. I don't want your negativity going into the drum. And I just got really, really angry when she said that. But luckily, I didn't let myself say what I was feeling at that point. I just kind of walked away. And at that point, we went into silence. So there was no opportunity, really, to just sort of, like, sort it out immediately. But that was very interesting, because I was just sort of left there with my mental states, and initially I was with all this anger and rage and whatever, and being very, very childish, basically. You know, I was just sort of thinking, oh, you're not my friend kind of thing, like a three-year-old. And then I could sort of see, well, actually, that was really silly because, you know, she was my friend. And the reason that I'd reacted in that way because I'd felt hurt by her, you know, and the reason she'd reacted in that way because she'd felt hurt by me kind of thing. And I suppose allowing myself to feel what I felt fully, you know, all the irrationality of it, all the sort of intensity of it, was very helpful in just sort of seeing that process that, you know, something happened I didn't like, I had this reaction of anger, I reacted from it in an unskillful way, created this situation, and then I was in a, you know, in more pain, more suffering, and all that kind of stuff. But also it's quite interesting because, you know, over the course of the day and the next day, you know, I was very aware of my emotions, my mental states changing. So that what initially had felt like some very overwhelming, very kind of intense feelings, by the end it was sort of like, well, what was I getting so bothered about? You know? And I suppose part of it was being able, you know, I suppose if in that initial interaction I hadn't been able to sort of practice some kind of containment, holding of my reaction, some kind of forbearance instead of just sort of retaliating when I felt hurt, then I could have, you know, I could have ruined that friendship, really. But actually, as it was, we were able to sort of talk about it and acknowledge, you know, how we'd felt hurt by each other, and, you know, and we, you know, we still have a very good friendship. But it was also interesting for me, that process, because it really made me understand some of the dynamic in my family, and sort of see, you know, well, understand my father better, so that was quite helpful to me. So I think there is a place where if you can actually spend time allowing yourself to feel something and then sort of exploring it, exploring the conditions that arose, then you can sometimes get sort of insight, which can help you in your everyday life, and also it can help you, you know, in your spiritual path. I mean, on that retreat, I also had the opportunity to practice Kishanti towards my body, because I got there and I got a kidney infection, quite a severe kidney infection. And initially I tried not to say anything about it, because the whole idea was that you were cut off from the world, but actually that was probably not the best idea, because then it kind of did get quite severe and I did have to go out a couple of times in order to get treatment. But it did mean that even when the infection was over, I actually felt quite weak for some time, and I wasn't able to engage with all the things that I wanted to engage with on the retreat. I couldn't do the full program for a while. I couldn't even get to the shrine room for a while. And it's just this amazing landscape there, all these wonderful mountains and beautiful hills and flowers. And I had all these plans about going on these long walks and hikes, which I just couldn't do. So again, like initially, well, I was upset and I was in pain, but I was just sort of trying not to get myself into feeling sorry for myself or wishing things weren't the same. I just had to sort of, well, this is what is, basically. This is the situation I am in. This is how my body is. I can't actually change that. So how can I work with that? So I did actively try and practice Kishanti towards that. And it did actually help me then, you know, make sure that I still had a very rich and worthwhile retreat. It wasn't quite the retreat that I'd imagined, but it was still, you know, a very profound experience. So, yes, the aspect of Kishanti and spiritual receptivity, I think that's quite important, because one of the things that helps us to practice patience and forbearance is if we can be in touch with our higher values, our ideals, if we can have a sort of perspective that includes a sort of dharmic perspective, that can be really helpful, particularly in terms of, well, understanding that, you know, suffering is in the world, that dukkha is one of the things in the conditioned world, that everybody experiences it, that until we actually get enlightened, we are going to be experiencing it. So it's not just a question of sort of trying to find a way of avoiding it, but there is a way of, you know, accepting that it will be in your life, and then how we respond to that, whether we can use it as an opportunity to find out more about ourselves, to grow, to develop, or whether it has the opposite effect and makes us close down, makes us sort of become more defensive. I suppose my journey has been from having been from a very, very defensive position initially and being very paranoid, very distrustful of other people, to sort of opening out. And part of that has been, well, a very significant part of that has been through practicing, practicing meditation, especially practices like the Metta Bhavana, and also through, you know, through the teachings and practicing the teachings and then finding that they actually worked and finding that they, you know, had a positive effect on me, and also seeing other people practicing on my side with me and seeing the effects it was having on them as well. So in terms of the teachings and the Dharma, it's not just a question of having knowledge of the teachings and intellectual understanding. It's very much, in terms of Kishanti, in terms of receptivity, it's about being open to, you know, how they affect you in your lives. It's about having an emotional response, a resonance with it, and then a desire to put them into practice in your life, and to sort of see how that affects you in your everyday life. And to be open to it changing you, because I think if you do genuinely take on board the practices, they will change you over time. You may not be aware of it happening at the time, but they will. And actually, sometimes it's been quite useful to look back over your life see, well, where was I then? How have I changed? You know, even look back over a year, 5 years, 10 years. Because like I was saying, quite often we don't notice the changes as they're happening. And I think often we also tend to focus on all the things that haven't changed, all the areas where we judge or criticise ourselves, rather than acknowledging, you know, the progress that we've made, the qualities that we have, and to see the places where we are actually making spiritual progress. It's like in meditation, it's so easy to just focus on all the times you're distracted and sort of not necessarily acknowledge that for some of it you were very absorbed, very concentrated. You know, if you have moments of not being aware, you can forget all the moments where you have been aware. So for me, this receptivity links into what in Buddhism we call Shraddha, or faith, which is our sort of response to our higher ideals. Something in us, you know, is drawn to it, wants to sort of get closer, wants to develop it more. So that can be different for different people. Some people might respond to the images of the Buddha and the Bodhisattvas. Some people might respond to particular teachings. Some people might have a response to the people and the sort of energy and the kind of communication or the friendliness that they experience. But I suppose these are all kind of aspects of, you know, the results of the Buddha's teaching coming through in different ways. With Shraddha, it's sort of where we place our heart on, the things that are of most value to us. And there's always this sense of it being something that we have to test against our experience. You know, the Buddha said, don't take anything, you know, as blind faith. You have to try it and see what happens, you know. But how you can tell whether it's the real Dharma is you practice it, and does it make you kinder? Does it make you more generous? Does it make you more ethical? So that's why Kishanti, that element of receptivity, I think, is important. And I think, again, especially when we're experiencing difficult, challenging situations, conditions in our lives, and we all do, we could be going through a bereavement, we could have lost our job, there could be some illness or something, we could have split up with a partner. There's all kinds of things when in our lives we'll be experiencing a lot of dukkha, really. So in those times I do find it's very helpful to be able to sort of hold that experience, to try and reflect on some of the teachings. You know, so things, in particular, things like teaching of impermanence, teachings of the law of conditionality, that everything arises in dependence upon sets of conditions. So it can help you to have a sense of perspective, I think, that, well, in terms of impermanence, you can be aware that, you know, whatever situation you're in, it will not last forever, that things will be changing, that your responses, your moods will be changing as well. It can also be helpful if you start thinking about the conditions. Well, are there things about the conditions that I can change? We can actually try and use the law of karma to sort of help us. Karma doesn't mean that everything that happens to us is the result of our past actions. There's all kinds of things that are outside of our control, but what we do have control is over ethics and that area of what we do, our actions of body, speech and mind. So when we're practicing meditation, when we're practicing ethics, that's the area that we're working with. And very, very much implicit in that is that actions have consequences, and that skillful actions will have beneficial consequences to us and to others, and that unskillful actions will have more harmful ones. You know, we may not actually see see the results immediately. It may happen over time. Though actually I think in terms of our mental states, we quite often have a more immediate response, because, you know, if we've been, you know, cruel or ungenerous to somebody, you know, we probably don't feel that good about it. You know, if we've had an argument with somebody, it might be playing on our mind, it might be affecting us when we sit down to meditate. And on the other hand, if we've done something that is skillful, if we've been kind, if we've been generous, we're likely to feel more expansive, we're more likely to feel good about ourselves. So on that level, then probably we do feel that food, but in terms of our external lives, we might not see that effects necessarily. But what we need to take on faith is that, you know, the actions do have consequences, and that, you know, behaving ethically will have more positive consequences. And it's sort of good to have a chance to look at the views that we have. Because one of the things that I find, if I'm working with anger, hatred, ill will, there's usually a view underneath there that I've got, which is causing me to react in a particular way. Trying to think of an example, and I can't just off that. Well, I suppose, like, in terms of, well, prejudice, or just, you know, immediately trying to categorise people, judge people, put them into categories. So I think it's easy to want to be around people that are similar, that you feel safe with, and that sometimes people who are different can feel threatening, people who have different views can feel threatening. And sometimes there's some objective reality to that. You know, I have friends who've been beaten up for being gay, friends who've been beaten up for being black, so, you know, certain sets of views can lead to violence and to harm, so one has to be aware of them, and one has to sort of keep a wide berth of people with them. But that's not quite the same as thinking, oh, I don't like the view that person has, so they're a bad person, and I don't like them. Or even just feeling that sort of sense of aversion and not wanting to engage or see them as a whole person, which is certainly something that I've done in the past. I think I do it less now, but it, you know, it is something that can happen. So, yes, in fact, when we're practicing the metta bhavana, you know, we're very much working against, you know, those sorts of views. We're trying to work towards not necessarily liking everybody and wanting to be their best friends, but having that attitude of wishing well for them, wanting well for them, that sense of solidarity, connection with other people in the world, regardless of who they might be, what they might have done, what their views might be, to go beyond our preferences, beyond whether people are going to be in our, whether we know them, whether we're in relationship with them, whether they can be of any benefit to us or make us feel good. We're trying to go beyond all of that and, you know, still feel compassion, kindness towards them. So one of the ways that I've found helpful to work with sort of feelings of anger and ill will is just trying, basically, to cultivate awareness and to sort of stay with awareness, and not get into sort of my more conditioned responses of judging something or suppressing something or denying something. So in terms of, you know, if I'm meditating and I find myself experiencing anger or rage, in the past I would have felt that made me a bad person. Well, in the distant past, I probably wouldn't have even let myself feel that feeling, you know. It's not unusual when you teach meditation, particularly the metta bhavana practice, to people, that people will say, oh, I can't think of anyone to put in the fourth stage. And I think that's because of that kind of denial of those sorts of feelings. But of course, we still feel anger. It gets expressed in other ways, indirectly. So it is very helpful to actually just be able to be honest and see what is, and see, well, this is what I'm experiencing in the moment. Not get into judging it, not getting into stories about it, but just say, well, you know, this is what I'm experiencing. Or if you're experiencing fear, if you're experiencing grief, whatever it is, we all have feelings that we find difficult or particularly difficult to let into our experience. But one of the things that we're trying to do in meditation is to sort of become more and more aware of more and more of ourselves, to be able to hold, you know, the totality of our experience, you know, the complexity of our experience, which is full of contradictions. We can feel, you know, two or three different feelings that may seem on the surface to be different, you know, opposed to each other at the same time. We can have different kinds of views and ambivalences. So, you know, we may like to think of ourselves as being a certain kind of person and thinking in a certain kind of way, and then suddenly from left centre we'll find ourselves popping up with a view that, you know, I don't believe that, I don't think that, but you are, you know. So, again, the more we can let things into our consciousness, the more we can sort of accept and integrate it into the whole of who we are, then the less likely we are to act from it in an unconscious way, and in an unskillful way, you know. Particularly if, you know, if we are conscious of a reaction, of a feeling, if we can allow ourselves to feel it, sometimes it will get transformed anyway, just through awareness. And it's not about sort of trying actively not to feel something, trying actively to feel something else. I think when I first started out doing the Metta Bhavana practice, particularly with the title being Cultivation of Loving Kindness, I thought I had to feel loving kindness in every stage of the metta while I was sitting down. And then I sort of judged myself as a bad meditator if I didn't. But what we're doing is we're working with our conditioning, we're working with our attitudes, we're working with our habits. So it's much more helpful just to bring a person to mind and then just see what your response is. You know, maybe your response is resentment, maybe it's anger, maybe it's, you know, maybe it is love or metta. But to just be honest and allow that there. And certainly what I find is that when I resist something, the more and more I resist it, the bigger it gets. And at the point when I actually stop resisting it, kind of surrender and let myself experience it more fully, that's the point where it will usually change, or at least get less, well, have less power because it's held in part of a wider experience. I think that whole thing about trying to be receptive to the whole of our experience is really quite key as well. Because when we're experiencing difficult times, when we're experiencing dukkha, we can very much focus on the painful feelings. We can think a lot about the problems and about... but actually, probably in our experience, there will also be something that's more pleasant, something that's more positive, that we just, you know, can't connect with, can't see at that time. You know, if we're feeling a particular emotion, sometimes we can forget, you know, that we actually experience a whole range of emotions, and that's just one of them. Yeah. If we're aware of ourselves in a particular state, well, that may be passing, that may not last. It may be familiar, because it's a state we've got into a lot of other times, but that's not a whole of who we are. So having that kind of perspective, you know, which I think reflecting on some of the Dharmic teachings can really help us in terms of, not getting into that kind of reactivity, not getting into that kind of escalation of being angry, expressing it, the other person then getting angry and getting into a sort of cycle of getting each other more and more angry and hurt or whatever. And, you know, there's different ways of doing it. I've actually found, I do respond a lot to the archetypal figures. So one of the archetypal Buddhas is called Akshobhya, and he has this mirror-like wisdom. And I found it really helpful just trying to sort of reflect on that, trying to in a way, develop that quality. And it's quite interesting because he transforms the poison of hatred into metta through his mirror-like wisdom, which is basically just seeing what things are. And it's called mirror-like because, like a mirror, it's supposed to reflect exactly what it sees without distortion. And that when you take something away, then it doesn't stick to the mirror, the image isn't there. The mirror doesn't try and sort of censor anything that's there either. It just sort of reflects back what you find. And I think meditation can very much be a mirror to the self. But sometimes, because of our conditioning, we can sort of have quite distorted mirrors, so we can sort of see ourselves as being a certain way or So one of the things that we're trying to do is actually to sort of get more clarity, get more honesty, but also to allow ourselves to see who we are, explore who we are without getting into stories about it, without getting into self-criticism or judgment or blame if we find things that we don't like. And also to allow ourselves to be honest about our good qualities and our achievements. So I think I've kind of been rambling a bit off topic. But basically, yes, Kishanti is about being able to practice patience and forbearance, and towards ourselves, towards others, towards the conditions in our lives. And I think that's probably a good place to stop. So I will.